Let's get going. There is a certain amount of dribble coming in, and you are delaying the time of the lecture a little bit, so we have to get moving and get things on the way because it's a busy day. There is a couple of announcements which I probably have to repeat because not all of you guys are here, and that is that tomorrow's schedule is changed. As you know, the anatomy memorial service has been cancelled. And it was because of that service that we had a lecture at 12 o'clock, at 11 o'clock, then the laboratory at from 2 to 5. We have now changed that back to lecture tomorrow at 1 o'clock and the usual laboratory until 4 o'clock, okay? So that is, it's changed. So tomorrow you have class in oral histology. I'm not sure why. Why you need to applaud. But anyway, 1 to 4 tomorrow. Morning classes are gone. Okay? Okay, good for you. Now, the other thing, the other point is that I am in the process of posting the next set of assignments. But this morning the duties of the dean's office came hot and heavy, and so I will do it right after class today, okay, at 4 o'clock I will post them. But I have them written out, but I haven't posted them yet. But you will have them late afternoon, and so groups A and B tomorrow will start with cementum and alveolar bone, and you will start labeling that as well as the periodontal ligament. Okay, now as I said, we are now moving into the next part of topics of oral histology. We have now covered the tissues of the tooth, pulp, dentin, and enamel. And we now go to the final tissue that is technically located on the tooth, cementum, but because of its unique functional relationship with the rest of the periodontal tissues, it's really considered part of the periodontium. And because cementum and alveolar bone have many similarities, we are talking about both of them at the same time. Just this old picture that you have seen before, the tissues of the tooth proper, enamel, dentin, and pulp, which we have seen. Now cementum, functionally, cementum is part of the periodontium, and it is being treated in this course as that. Periodontium is composed of three sets of tissues, cementum, alveolar bone, and periodontal ligament, and one combination of tissues in the dentogingival area, which is the attached gingiva and the dentogingival junction, and there's a whole series of tissues involved with that, but we'll come to that at the end of next week. Okay, let's first begin by talking just briefly about the comparison of tooth attachment modes, because it has much to do with the development of cementum. The earliest developing teeth were actually on the surface of the individual bones, when a protoacrodont, but when you can start talking about tooth development, you really first start looking at it with fishes, and fishes have what we call an acrodont attachment. That means that the tooth sits on top of the tooth-bearing bone, rather, and it can be attached to that bone either by ankylosis or by a fibrous joint so that the tooth can move back and forth. So that's one of the possibilities. Another possibility, which we typically find in reptiles, is the pleurodont variety of attachment, which means that the tooth is actually sitting on the inside of the jaw with one part a little higher up, more occlusal, and the other part a little lower down, and then again you can have various types of attachment, again ankylosis and fibrous joints. Now, how does cementum come into the picture? It doesn't really show very much, but cementum is in fact the homologue of the attachment bone in fishes. And that is particularly well shown in these two diagrams. Both of them are development of multiple teeth in different kinds of fish. But you notice here, this is the sequence. If you have an already functional tooth, from the side of the functional tooth you get an outgrowth, which is like a cap stage and comes more like a bell stage. heart tissues form, and when the heart tissues finally come and are completed, they literally are setting themselves on the surface of the dental bone. The bone in this case is just a plain bone and a tooth attaches to it. But there is another variation, and that other variation is intramedullary tooth development. You have again a functional tooth here, and then the whole sequence of events is a developing tooth from that epithelium of that functional tooth. The different stages of tooth development occur. The tooth actually erupts out of the dental bone. And now, as it is beginning to appear in the oral cavity, a second ring of bone develops that is known as the bone of attachment. And you notice that the bone of attachment is, in fact, separate from the tooth and kind of forms an intermediary between the tooth and the bone of the jaw. And that is what we mean when we say it is a homologue of cementum, because this bone of attachment literally serves as the bridge between the tooth and the bone of the jaw. And so what we end up with, we have this kind of situation, a thecodont attachment, also sometimes known as gomphosis, where the bone of attachment has now physically been laid down on the surface of the root, and that is, of course, the cementum, and then it is attached by way of a periodontal ligament to the alveolar process. In our case, our entire root is covered with cementum, and so all around you have a periodontal ligament. Of course, in the situations where you have continuously growing teeth, which is a special example of these kinds of relationships, you only have root-like tissue on one surface of the continuously erupting tooth, but on the other side you have continuously more enamel forming. So there is, in a continuous incisor of a rat or a mouse, you really only have one side of the tooth where you have the kind of attachment like a periodontal ligament attachment. On the other side where the enamel is forming, there is no periodontal ligament. So it's a very interesting difference that you should at least be aware of. When you talk about these periodontal tissues, cementum, alveolar bone, and periodontal ligaments, what they really resemble most is, like the George Washington Bridge, or any other bridge like it, a suspension bridge, where there are two towers and the cables are hanging between the towers. And essentially then the alveolar bone and the cementum are the two towers of the suspension bridge, and the cables are the periodontal ligament fibers. You cannot have a bridge that is in any way functional unless all three components are intact. And the same thing is true for the periodontium. If any of these three components is diseased, for example cementum or periodontal ligament or the bone, any one of those, if they are out, the whole periodontium fails. And so that's something that you need to be aware of, that all three have to be healthy. You notice here that the fibers, the periodontal ligament fibers, are running from one side to the other, and they are inserting as Sharpie's fibers in these mineralized tissues. Now, how do the cementum and bone tissues compare with each other? You know, cementum, some people have said, if you found it in a histologic section anywhere in the toe, you would call it bone. And in fact, morphologically, cementum and bone are very similar. But there are some really subtle differences, and they are shown here. I have actually highlighted them over here and over here. In both cases, the dominant fibrous component of the fibrous matrix is type 1 collagen, but there are, in the case of cementum, also some type 3 collagen components. Not a whole lot, but there is some of it. Other bone collagens typically are found in both tissues. Among the non-collagenous proteins, you find all the typical proteins that you find in bone tissue, including some of the components of the sibling group, and then you find proteoglycans, and there are two kinds of proteoglycans. the ones that have a lot of keratin sulfate and the ones that have a lot of chondroitin sulfate. Here is the second difference. In the case of the keratin sulfate-rich proteoglycans, Lumican and fibromodulin, there is a slightly higher amount of that in the cementum. Again, precisely what that means at this time we don't know. These are observations made. So you can say that cementum and bone tissue really are closely similar, but not identical. There is, in fact, a slight difference in the extracellular matrix of those two. So let's now look at the histology of cementum. Cementum is found on the root surface, and just when you start looking even at the lowest possible power in a histologic slide, you notice that there is a difference between the cementum that covers the coronal half of the root as opposed to the cementum that covers the apical half of the root. And what you notice is that in the coronal half, the cementum is pretty much glass-like. It's shiny. There's nothing much to be seen in it. And it is very thin. It is a very thin layer of cementum. That's about all you have. And then when you come in the apical half, the layer of cementum increases in thickness dramatically, and you see these little structures inside here, which on closer inspection are cementocytes. We recognize in the simplest of terms, therefore, two types of cementum, and that is acellular cementum, where there are no cells embedded, and cellular cementum, where there are cells embedded, and of course, the cellular cementum looks very much like bone tissue, while the acellular cementum looks like bone tissue without osteocytes. Now, that is not entirely surprising. The vast majority of all living creatures, all vertebrates on this earth, have bone tissue that is acellular. Most fishes have acellular bone, so it's not entirely unheard of in bone. Nevertheless, we have these two different kinds of cementum, and we notice that. Now look at this here. This is acellular cementum. This acellular cementum is just a few hundred micrometers thick, and it doesn't really get much thicker during life. On the other hand, the cellular cementum is continuously increasing in life. Just continuously more is being deposited on the surface. And so after a while, you get this kind of a club-shaped root tip, something that surgically you have to deal with. When you extract a tooth, you find that it sometimes is hard to remove an older tooth because the ends of the roots are wider and rounder than the more coronal parts of the root. Here's the same ground section is the example. And what we now do, and the terminology in this case makes sense, we have acellular extrinsic fiber cementum, acellular, that already we knew, but now comes the new part of the terminology, extrinsic fiber cementum. And this is cellular, that is not new, mixed stratified cementum. And even though I don't really particularly care for abbreviations, it is just much simpler to call it AEFC and CMSC rather than spelling it out. So we'll stick with the abbreviations. So the acellular extrinsic fiber cementum is found on the coronal half to two-thirds, that's the precise term, the coronal half to two-thirds of the root, while the cellular mixed stratified cementum is found in the furcation of the tooth, if there is a furcation, and also on the apical half to one-third of the root. Now let's go a little bit closer into it. Let's first look at root development, and particularly I'm going to first talk about the development of the acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. And the reason for that is that it is somewhat unusual and maybe in a class all its own. So let's begin with that. As you know, root development begins when you first see an epithelial root sheet of Hertwig's, HERS, and you know that the composition of the epithelial root sheet is just two cell layers thick, IEE, and OEE. That's it. And that is in contrast to when you're still working with the crown, where the cervical loop has four layers, OEE, IEE, SR, and SI. Okay, so that is that difference. Once you see this, and once the tooth starts erupting, of course you cannot tell it on the histologic section, you have the Hertwig root sheet and root development. So the statement that we make, and we'll go into this big time next week, is that root formation begins when the eruptive motion or movement of the tooth begins. And so what you find is that essentially the speed at which the root forms in an apical direction roughly equals the speed at which the tooth is erupting, which means that relatively speaking, this growing end of the root stays pretty much in place. If this movement equals this movement, the root stays in place, the root tip stays in place, right? So that is something interesting. Now, sometimes it goes a little faster, sometimes it goes a little slower, and we'll deal with that next week. But the point is that, in essence, this is what occurs. And then we also know that only that part of the epithelial root sheath that is still going to induce odontoblasts remains intact. And so in this particular section, which is a nice green section, but the epithelial cells are red, you notice that the root sheath is only intact beyond the area where the dentin is, and so it's just near the apex, developing apex of the tooth. And in this case, it forms a little diaphragm, very frequently does, and it's known as the epithelial diaphragm. Okay, it kind of slightly bends in. So the epithelial diaphragm is just the tip of the epithelial root sheath that kind of goes a little in a central direction. But you notice that everything above it is actually little clumps of cells, and these are the remnants of malocele, or the epithelial remnants of malocele. So this is a very, very good histologic description of that process, and here it is in the diagram. Again, this much is HERS, and of course it is going all around, so it is a little cylinder of epithelial cells, and these are the remnants of malocele, ERM. If you have multiple roots, as is shown in this case, you first subdivide the cervical opening, and then you have the root sheets forming. And again, this particular image shows the root sheet intact over here on the apical end, and the remnants of malocele are that little network that remains around that root that is now beginning to form dentin for pretty much the first couple of years of the existence of that tooth. Just briefly, root formation, as I said, begins when the tooth start moving during its eruptive motion, and about two-thirds of the length of a root is formed when the tooth reaches functional occlusion. So somewhere over here, close to that, the root is not yet completed, but the tooth is already functional. And what you find is that the last part of the root, that little tip, here is the apical foramen is half formed, and here the apical foramen is completed. That process actually takes place when the tooth is already functional. And as a result, what you have is that the tooth is no longer moving in an occlusal direction. It has reached functional occlusion. And so the tip of the roots frequently goes in very awkward directions. Sideways, sometimes it becomes crinkled. The teeth may be loaded at the daytime, but during the nighttime the teeth may not be loaded. And so as a result, what you get is very peculiar shaping of the root tip. The other problem that you have is that you no longer have a tooth moving in this direction. So now what happens is the roots, as they complete, are actively moving further into the jaw. And they can, when they do that, they can in fact encounter structures such as the inferior alveolar canal. And so we frequently find, especially with the third molar, that the third molar can begin to develop some very interesting relationships with its root tips and the inferior alveolar canal. Something that you have to worry about, again, when you need to worry about extraction. Because in some cases, in fact, the tooth may literally have grown around the inferior alveolar canal with its root tips, and you have to make sure that when you extract the tooth, you're not ripping the canal and its contents, more importantly, in the process. So you will learn a whole series of clever tricks in radiography to determine whether the root is in fact interfering with the canal, whether you can safely extract it or not. If you cannot, it will have to be done surgically. So these are interesting things that you have to be aware of. That final process of root development can in fact make complications for the individual in later life. But now let's go back to the tissues. And here is something that we haven't really discussed before, because there was no need for it, but here it is. As you know, when the odontoblasts, which are located here, are laying down the dentin after a while undergoes mineralization. So this is dentin, and the red part is predentin. Okay, there's always a little layer of predentin between the odontoblasts and the mineralized dentin. But you may notice something else. You may notice that the outermost layer of the root dentin does not mineralize right away. And that is something that has implications both for the development of the periodontal ligament and also for the development of the first dentin, the first cementum that's being laid down. So what you have is this very peculiar situation where on the outside you have unmineralized dentin. And you can see that in a section, it's not easy to see. Here is the predentin. And then when you go around it, you can see up to some point, you can see the unmineralized layer here. It's not very sharp in this case. It is hardly ever very sharp because that layer is only about a fraction of a micrometer thick. So it's not terribly thick, but it's there. And that remains unmineralized. It contains some of these enamel-like proteins like amelogenin, and possibly some ameloblastin. What you find is that this layer actually serves for the initial insertion of the fibers of the periodontal ligament. So what you're getting here is a mixing of periodontal ligament fibers and the fibers of the still unmineralized dentin. Now, just a term that you may come across, it's an ancient term, but it's called this peripheral unmineralized predentin-like layer is called the hyaline layer of Hopewell-Smith. Somebody from the 19th century, he described it. He didn't know what he was looking at, but he described it quite accurately. And it is kind of a shiny little layer in section, and that's why he called it the hyaline layer. And Hopewell-Smith was, in fact, one of my old colleagues in the Department of Oral Histology in Pennsylvania, UPenn. So Hopewell-Smith comes from there. I never knew him, of course. Okay, although some of you may think I did. So that is the first layer that we have to deal with. Slightly higher up, you see something else. And that is the first formed cementum. And it's indicated here as intermediate cementum. The intermediate cementum is the first formed layer of cementum. It's intensely basophilic because it contains these proteins, and especially osteopontin. And as you may recall, osteopontin is a matricellular protein which interacts with between cells and extracellular matrix. And this layer here may have a role in cell adhesion and the regulation of mineralization. So that is a layer of tissue which really belongs to the cementum. It's called intermediate cementum and it is just a few micrometers thick. So these two layers are found next to each other in that peripheral root dentin that we are seeing here. By the time intermediate cementum forms, however, the hyaline layer of Hopewell-Smith begins to mineralize. Okay, here it is again at the higher power. This is the hyaline layer right here. And over here, the dark area, is the intermediate cementum. And notice something here. What you're seeing here is that there is this much root formation. It goes beyond the picture from here all the way down. That is present, and all that dentin is present, and just here near the cervix do you begin to get the first cementum formation. So the first thing that you can see is that you have to form a lot of root before any cementum begins to show. Okay? Doesn't happen very quickly. But now you see that between that root surface and these little remnants of malacea, you are beginning to see cells that may come from the dental sac, and that will be the earliest forming cementoblasts. And they will be responsible for the cementum. Okay, here are the epithelial remnants of malacea. That's a fully formed root. And for a little while, during the first functioning of the tooth, these remnants will be present. Now, what do you need to get cementum formation? You must have breakdown of HERS. So if you don't have the breakdown of the epithelial root sheet, no cementum will form. Look at this preceding picture here. Here you have an area between where the enamel matrix stops and root formation clearly had begun. And over here, the epithelial root sheet continues to stay on the surface of that root. When that happens, no cementum will form in that area. Okay, you guys drink too much. Okay. So breakdown of HERS is essential. Next, there's probably some inductive interaction between the outermost surface of the dentin and the cells of the dental sac, where some bone matrix protein number 2 is generated, especially in the dentin. There may be bone matrix protein 2 that leads to the inductive interaction of cementoblasts. And then, and only for this type of cementum, you need mineralized dentin. That may be the reason why it takes so long before the first cementum forms. Because as long as the hyaline layer of Hopewell-Smith is there, no cementoblast will differentiate and they will definitely not start to form cementum. So that is one reason why that is so. Now, if there is not going to be mineralized cement, mineralized dentin, we can do this in the laboratory, you do not form acellular extrinsic fibrous cementum, you form cellular intrinsic fibrous cementum. So the type of cementum that will form depends on whether the dentin is ultimately mineralized or not mineralized. If it becomes mineralized, you start forming AEFC. If it does not mineralize, you form something else, and that is CIFC. Now let me walk with you through the steps of that AEFC formation. And this is done based on the work of two people that have spent a lot of time on this tissue, Bossart and Schroeder, and these are actual human specimens. And what you're seeing, this is always low power, and here is a higher power of the same area. And so when you look at the low power, I hope you can see it. Yeah, you can see it somewhat. You see here something marked dentin, D, and you see this is a darker area. And then over here, it says OCJ, which is right here. And in between the dentin and that dentinocementum junction, there is unmineralized dentin at this time. And that unmineralized dentin now serves to as a place where these fibers that are being formed on the outside are going to insert. These are the fibers of the future periodontal ligament. And when you look closely, you can see that these fibers are going all the way into the dentin, the unmineralized part of the dentin, where they are literally become part of that tissue. The question then can be asked whether the presence of these fibers in this area causes the development of the granular layer of tomes. Remember that we had previously discussed the granular layer of tomes. It's an area where you have these dark granules, and these dark granules are cross-sectioned fibers, collagen fibers, that are not mineralized in the center. And it is just possible that these fibers that are inserting here from the periodontal ligament in that still unmineralized dentin may be the reason why we form the granular layer of tomes. Now, this is the same picture that you showed, and what you therefore know is that this is very close to the growing apical tip. So what you're seeing is you form the first unmineralized dentin, and you then begin to form next the periodontal ligament fibers, which are literally inserted in that peripheral dentin. But there are not yet any layers of cementum present at this time. Okay, let's move on. Okay, now we are a little bit further away, 300 micrometers, and this is going from very low power to intermediate power to high power. And if we just go straight to the high power, again, notice that there is an area of mineralized dentin visible, that is over here, this is dentin. This is the DCJ, dentinocementum junction. And then again, you see these fibers which are literally crossing in like this, crossing in here all the way, as deep as they can, in that unmineralized dentin at the periphery. You also notice here a cell, and here is a cell, another one here. These are fibroblast-like cells. For the time being, we will call them cementoblasts. They really look more like fibroblasts, and they could equally well be the fibroblasts of the periodontal ligament. But you have to know that that is not a settled issue, and until it is a settled issue, we call these cementoblasts of what is going to be the acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. Now we are going a good distance from the growing apical tip, and now for the first time you realize, if you look at the lowest power here, that this dark area of mineralized dentin now goes all the way to the surface, and you no longer have an unmineralized predentin-like layer. And what you're seeing instead, you're seeing a little fibrous fringe sticking out from the surface, and these fibers actually are the beginning to undergo mineralization. And so what you're now having is dentinocementum junction right here. This is mineralized dentin over here. And now you see a very dark area, which is the matrix of the acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. And you see fibers extending from it, which are the fibers of the periodontal ligament, and they have, as you know, been inserted way beyond where the acellular cementum begins, and they are actually mineralized all the way up to this point. So you get an interesting tissue with little bumps of mineralized fibers that are sticking out beyond the surface of that tissue. And that's what you're having. So now let's look at this little section here. This is the DCJ. It is about 50 micrometer in width in most cases. It's not a sharp line. And what you're finding here now is a series of lines that look a little lighter that are extending into this tissue here. Those are the fiber bundles of the periodontal ligaments. And as you know, they go all the way in here. And these fibers occupy most of the space. And that's why we call this acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. Because it is acellular, there are no cells embedded in the tissue, and the fibers of that tissue largely are extrinsic fibers. They are coming from the outside. They are the periodontal ligament fibers. There are, in fact, very few intrinsic fibers in this particular tissue. And you see here, sticking out from the surface, these are all the fibers, these are all the extrinsic fibers sticking out into the periodontal ligaments. So there is really very little place on the surface even for these cementoblasts to find a spot. And here you see in a transmission electron microscope a few of these fibers. These are the extrinsic fibers that are in the cementum, and they are projecting as mineralized bumps to the outside surface, and then they continue as the fibers of the PDL. So these are truly Sharpe's fibers. The fibers that you're seeing inside this mineralized tissue are Sharpe's fibers. They are largely, because they're thin fibers, they're largely mineralized, and they make up most of the mass of this tissue. So then what is acellular extrinsic fiber cementum? It seems to be largely the fibrous matrix is largely produced by the fibroblasts of the periodontal ligament. Maybe some proteins were deposited, like osteopontin, osteonectin, they definitely may be there, and that may be why you can talk about cementoblasts. But then you can just make the claim that this acellular extrinsic fiber cementum is really just a mineralized base of the periodontal ligament fibers. And do you need actually separate cells? So there are many schools of thought about this. And some people will claim that there are no cementoblasts for acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. But so far there's just a few. They're very clever people. But I would, for your sanity and for your ability to write national board examinations, there are cementoblasts for acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. But you're bright enough to realize that that is not a generally agreed upon thing anymore, and that there are people who don't agree with this. Now, here you are, and if you actually take a root of a tooth and you digest all of the collagen fibers from the surface, what you're seeing, if you look at the surface, you see these little bumps sticking out. Those are these mineralized domes of the fibers, the extrinsic fibers that insert into that cementum. All right. Now let's look at this. This is a very different kind of thing. Cellular mixed stratified cementum is a layer of cementum that does continue to be deposited in considerable amounts, and it has definitely cementocytic lacunae all over here, and multiple arrest lines. Now, there are also arrest lines in acellular extrinsic fiber cementum, but they're very close together, and there are not that many of them. So, again, you start with intermediate cementum, and then you go forward and you have all of this cementum laying down. As I said, cellular mixed stratified cementum continues to be deposited throughout life, and so that layer can become quite thick. And this is a section through the tips of a maxillary molar, the root tips of a maxillary molar, and while you're seeing a dentin core in each of these root tips, obviously, with a little pulp root canal, you see then layer upon layer of cellular mixed stratified cementum. And these, in fact, can be shown to be annual rings. In other words, we are showing seasons in our cementum deposition. In the winter, we slow down. We get a little sluggish. Some of our hormones are not being produced at top speed. Come the spring, all of a sudden, you know, we all kind of perk up. The flowers are outside, they go. And we start producing more hormones, and we start also producing more cementum, among other things. some other things. Okay. So the thing is that in cementum you actually can find a definite period in which there is stagnant, no actual deposition of cementum, and then a pickup during spring and summer where some new cementum layer is deposited. And in fact, this is so useful that if you make the proper kind of sections, thin enough, carefully enough, in the right way, and you stain it in the right way, you can measure the number of rings, and you then say, okay, well, I know this is the so-and-so tooth, and that tooth usually emerges into the oral cavity at this age. So I take that age, I add it to the number of rings, and I have the age of the individual to whom this tooth belongs. And within a few years, we are quite close to that. And so it is now increasingly being used as one of the forensic tools that we might apply. Let's look at the cementocytes in the cellular cementum. Well, they look exactly like osteocytic lacunae, these lacunae of the cementocytes, with one difference. Osteocytes have canaliculi sticking out in all directions. Cementocytes have preferential orientation of the canaliculi to the cementoblasts only, not to the deeper cementocytes. Okay? So there is that difference in cellular cementum. You find that the canaliculi of the cementocytic lacunae are all sticking out to the outside world, where they communicate with the cementoblasts and where also where they get their nourishment, because that's the only source where they can get it. Cellular mixed stratified cementum has also, of course, Sharpie's fibers, and these Sharpie's fibers are generally considerably thicker than in the acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. And so when you look at the surface, you can see that these fibers make larger domes that protrude from the surface. And frequently, in the center, they may not even be mineralized, and so you sometimes can find a depression in those areas. So the Sharpie's fibers of cellular mixed stratified cementum are wider, and because they are wider, they don't get quite as well mineralized, so that sometimes the cores of these fibers remain unmineralized. And again, you can see them as Sharpie's fibers in the mineralized tissue quite clearly. Now, why do we call it cellular mixed stratified cementum? The reason for that is, going the wrong way, is that you in fact have alternating layers. In cellular mixed stratified cementum, you have primarily two layers. One is a layer of cellular intrinsic fiber cementum, where you have only fibers that are related to the cementum tissue itself. And then they alternate with acellular extrinsic fiber cementum, like you found on the higher, more coronal surface of that root. And these two layers, because they alternate, produce a clearly stratified look, between them they actually serve both to have cells in one area and good Sharpie's fibers in the other. All right. Let's go over this little list, because that tells you a whole lot. Acellular cementum is also known as primary cementum, while cellular cementum is also known as secondary cementum. And the reason is very simple, as it always is with primary and secondary. The primary forms early in development, while the secondary forms later in development. And you can, in fact, make a cutoff point. The primary acellular extrinsic fiber cementum forms prior to functional occlusion, and a little bit later on for a little while the cellular mixed stratified cementum forms after the functional occlusion is reached, and then pretty much throughout life. Now let's come to the cementoblasts. In your syllabus, I have made a more extensive statement. I would refer you to that. But there are several possible sources of cementoblasts that people claim. I just told you that some people claim that the fibroblast may be the cementoblast for acellular extrinsic fibrocementum. Another possibility is that the cells from the epithelial root sheath actually undergo an epithelial mesenchymal transformation and then become cementoblasts. In the case of the cellular cementum, these are the cementoblasts coming directly from the dental sac, neurocrest derived, and there's not much argument. But the argument continues to be about what cells are producing the acellular extrinsic fibrocementum. So are they the fibroblasts of the PDL? That's one question. Cementoblasts that have differentiated from the epithelial root sheath, or are they just the regular neurocrest-derived cells of the dental sac? So these are three possibilities that you could consider. Okay, acellular extrinsic fibrocementum forms exceedingly slowly at the rate of 2 to 2.5 micrometers per year, hardly worth talking about, while the cellular cementum forms faster. A no-brainer, no cementocytic lacunae here, and you do have lacunae there. Here you have less organic matrix, mostly extrinsic fiber cementum and a predominance of bone cyalloprotein, while in the case of the cellular cementum, you have more organic matrix laid down by the cementoblast with intrinsic fibers that are formed by the cementoblast. This is critical. This is better mineralized, less well mineralized. Limited thickness, and that is something that is you're going to use as a very good diagnostic tool in your sections, while here you can get a considerably thicker layer of cementum. Here, sharpest fibers are thin here and thicker here. So, okay, have fun with this. Good. Cementum, can it be resorbed? It doesn't resorb as easily as bone, and that is a good thing. When orthodontists move teeth, what they really like to see happen is that the bone resorbs and not the root of the tooth. So cementum resorption, in fact, is rarer than you find in bone, but it is possible, and what you're seeing here is actually the surface of a standard premolar tooth, and you're seeing here very nicely a whole series of osteoclastic resorption lacunae on that surface of the root. Can it be repaired? Yes, it can. And when it is repaired, typically what you find is a reversal line. Okay, this is the good old reversal line that you found in bone tissue. And that reversal line actually can extend through the acellular extrinsic fiber cementum, which you see here, into the dentin, which is all over here. But what is being laid down after you recover is what? Cellular intrinsic fiber cementum. That is what is formed when you are repairing a resorption cavity on a root. And the same thing is true when you're a periodontist and you try to assist the periodontal wound healing a little bit. When you do so, and frequently they do that with enamel matrix proteins, and that helps a lot. But what you're getting is this kind of tissue. Cellular intrinsic fiber cementum. Here is the apex of a root. This is the neurovascular bundle that is going to the apex. It is, of course, not visible through the entire length of the section, but it is going. Now, frequently, if a tooth moves in this direction or in this direction, some area of the surface of the apex can, in fact, be resorbed. And so what you're seeing here is this is the opening of the root canal, but immediately around it there are all kinds of resorption lacunae. All of this here are resorption lacunae all over the place. So resorption, again, is a possibility. So much for cementum. Let's briefly talk about alveolar bone. You know already a lot of alveolar bone, and so I can just kind of fill in the specifics for the morphology of the structure. First of all, let's talk about a gross arrangement. The anatomical alveolar process, that part of the jaw, that part of the mandible, that part of the maxilla, in which the roots of the teeth are located, that alveolar process continues of several components. On the outside, you have a cortical plate. It can be an outer cortical plate when you are on the buccal or labial side, and it can be an inner cortical plate when you are on the lingual or palatal side. So that is depends on where you are relative to the rest of the oral cavity. So that's a cortical plate. Compact bone. Remember compact bone? Here is compact bone. There is also an area on the inside facing the tooth, and that is known as the alveolar bone proper. The alveolar bone proper is literally that part of the alveolar process that directly surrounds the root. It is of fairly even thickness. It is compact, but it follows literally the outline of the root. So we call that alveolar bone proper. It is also called lamina dura. That's an X-ray term. And we'll come back to that when we talk about X-ray correlations. And it is also sometimes called a cribriform plate. That's an anatomical term. And the reason for that is that it has lots of little holes in their openings through which blood vessels communicate. So these three terms are used. Alveolar bone proper is what we will stick with in this course. And then between these two layers, if there is space, you have intervening spongy bone. Now here it is again. Alveolar bone proper is this innermost layer, and that goes right around the root. It follows the outline of the root. The inner cortical plate, that is the lingual surface. Outer cortical plate, the labial. And the spongy bone in between. Is that this bone lamellar? Of course it is. It's postnatal. Any bone in this area is lamellar bone because it's postnatal. Okay, now here is a very interesting diagram, which was produced in a sense to provide you with a third dimension. What you're seeing is a cut through the jaw, and then sticking out from the surface is a little bit of the alveolus of one of the teeth that is no longer in the section. And what you're looking at now is the surface of that alveolus. You're looking at the actual layer of the alveolar bone proper. And now you're looking at the surface of the alveolar bone proper, and you see all these little holes here. Those are the holes that provide anastomotic connections between the bone vasculature and the vasculature of the periodontal ligament. And that is the cribriform plate. That's why we call it a cribriform plate. All right, so here it is. This is a typical histologic image. Happens to be of the maxilla, and what you're seeing here is outer cortical plate, inner cortical plate, alveolar bone proper all the way around, and where there is additional space between those two, you have spongy bone. Why do we have an alveolar process? Because we have teeth. Remember the functional matrix? Teeth are the functional matrix. Bone forms because the teeth are there. And so the alveolar process only forms when the teeth are actually forming and erupting. And when you extract the tooth, the alveolar process will resorb. So as the tooth is erupting, growing up with that erupting tooth is the alveolar bone. There are variations in the way the alveolar process is structured. This is an ancient piece of work, but a very good piece of work. And in the incisor region, you find that in the maxillary region, you have lots of spongy bone on the palatal side. And in the case of the mandible, you have lots of spongy bone on the labial side. Now, so far we have talked about sections that go from labial or buccal to lingual or palatal. Now, what is the structure of an interdental septum. The structure of an interdental septum is shown here. This is one premolar, and this is a second premolar. Acellular extrinsic fiber cementum, very thin layer, very glassy, there are no cells in it. And now you're seeing here a layer of bone that surrounds the outline of the root on this side, and since the root has a little dimple here, you find that the bone is going like this, and then it goes on like that. Here is the alveolar bone proper of the adjacent tooth. Okay, so these two layers are alveolar bone proper. So what is the rest of the interdental septum? Spongy bone. No cortical bone. There is no cortical bone. Interdental septum has only alveolar bone proper layers, and if there is space, some spongy bone. Now, here is the specifics, the specific histology of alveolar bone proper. Alveolar bone proper, when it is fully intact, has generally two layers. Layer number one is the bone that is found right adjacent to the periodontal ligament. And it has the funny name of bundle bone. The next layer is lamellar bone. Some of it has osteones. That is the normal adult lamellar bone. So this is a very strange tissue, this bundle bone. You can't call it lamellar bone. It doesn't have typical bone lamellae. It really looks like the cellular mixed stratified cementum on the opposite side. It has Sharpie's fibers, lots of them. That's why we call it bundle bone. Bundles of fibers are sticking into this bone, so that is the reason for the name. And then it has a series of essentially arrest lines, very much like the arrest lines in the cementum. So the bundle bone is really the cementum-like tissue of the alveolar bone proper. That is where the periodontal ligament fibers insert, and you have very typically these large numbers of arrest lines. Here it is again, but now showing polarization microscopy. This is the boundary between lamellar bone with an osteone here, is the osteonal canal, and then here what you're seeing is much lighter, much darker, with these fibers inserting in it. That is the bundle bone. Okay, this dark area is where the PDL is, and then this is acellular extrinsic fiber cementum, and here is the dentin and the granular layer of tomes. Okay, get the picture, understand what you're looking at. Good. Now here's the thing that you want to see, and that is where we will end up. This is an important picture. It was originally produced in 1968, and it still is really one that we can use with profit. And that is the difference between acellular extrinsic fiber cementum, cellular mixed stratified cementum, and alveolar bone as far as the Sharpie's fibers are concerned. And so now what you're seeing here, this is the lateral view where the fibers are inserting into the bones. This is acellular extrinsic fiber cementum seen as the fibers are inserting. And what you're seeing here on the bottom picture is a surface view. Okay? And what you are noticing here is that the Sharpie's fibers are really thin in the acellular extrinsic fiber cementum. They're really thin, and they're also completely mineralized. Remember that this particular cementum was very highly mineralized. Now, when you go and you move on to the cellular mixed stratified, now what you find is that the fibers that are inserting are thicker, and they are thicker and so much so that their core remains unmineralized. When you look at the surface picture here, you see these inserting fibers. These are the Sharpie's fibers. But you now also see elements of fibers that are running parallel to the surface. Those are the intrinsic fibers. So the intrinsic fibers of the cementum are running parallel to the surface, while the Sharpie's fibers, the extrinsic ones, are running into the surface, are running at an angle, sometimes perpendicular. And now we get to the final tissue, that is the alveolar bone. And the alveolar bone has the thickest Sharpie's fibers. They go and form really thick fibers, again, unmineralized core, And when you look at this particular image of the bone, you see that the cores of the Sharpie's fibers that are not mineralized are bigger than the ones in the cellular cementum, but other than that, the two pictures are pretty comparable. Okay? So what the implication is for the structure of the periodontal ligament, we come to next time. Here are some beautiful pictures of the Sharpie's fibers in the alveolar bone. These are the fibers seen in longitudinal section. You can actually see them because their unmineralized cores are shrunk away from the rest of the tissue, and so they look like there's a little space in here. So these are these fibers. And over here, you see the inserting fibers in cross-section. And again, they are very typically slightly separated from the mineralized cementum. Okay, let's take a few minutes break, and then we'll go on with the